Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of our founder and muse and inspiration, Brian Brown. And we continue to call this the Brown Briefly, although Brian's been gone from us for over a year now, but he still inspires us all as we meet weekly to sort of talk about topics, local, regional, and national and world level sort of significance. So welcome. I'm your host, Bruce Holman, for today's show. Let me introduce the other Brieflies. We have at the control board our fearless pilot, Truman O'Brien. Welcome, Brian. Truman.
Good morning. Good morning.
And we have with us from around the street from me in Ellisport, Lynn Kerrigan.
Good morning, everybody.
And we have my other neighbor at the Yacht Club in the slip right next to mine, Kevin Jones.
Hey, good morning, neighbor.
Yeah. So what's exciting in the worlds of the Brieflies this week?
Well, I don't know if you heard any of my show, but my unofficial adopted daughter is in town visiting, so that was great fun. She's overstaying with daughter Molly. She's the daughter of very, very close friends of mine from years and years ago. She's out in Detroit, just finished up her PhD out there. And so she's been in visiting, and so she was my co-host this morning on the Morning Scramble. Yeah, we just had a great time. So
nice.
It was really fun having her on the show. So that's what's going on in my world.
That sounds quite exciting. Kevin.
All right. I was happy to see the natural irrigation came in for a couple of days there toward the end of the weekend. We've been working on landscaping on Vachon. Is like you take your pickaxe and your shovel and maybe a post hole digger and hope for the best, right? And so anyway, we've planted about 10 new little cedar trees around the property, and they need attention for the first couple of years, right, before they get the roots in the ground. So the natural irrigation was a blessing, so I don't have to haul buckets of water around. The other thing is the dead tree removal program is almost at close. I've got the waste has been removed from the property. I left plenty of snags for the woodpeckers and got plenty of bushes for the birds to nest in. But all the dead, potentially fire-prone underbrush is now on its way to becoming compost.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you talk about the difficulties of gardening where you are, Kevin. Where Lynn and I are, we're on a sand heap. So it just sort of like, we have the opposite problem from what you
right.
have. Ellisport just sort of like, wow, it's, everything drains. There's virtually no hard pan. You have to go down many, many, many feet before you hit any kind of clay layer. So it's just really interesting. And that's sort
on
of-
On the other hand, I'm on a slope. Yeah. All my topsoil washes away.
But it just reminded me of how different Vachon are, how not only geologically in terms of from the north end to the south end and east to west, but also in terms of all the microclimates that sort of make up Vachon, you know, everything from probably the wettest place on the island, the Shingle Mill Creek, and the driest is down around Gold Beach.
So, yeah, you know,
it's almost double the rainfall in Shingle Mill Creek compared to Gold Beach.
When I was working on the K2 project years ago, when we were looking at developing that, we looked at the rainfall totals around the island, and it's drastic. I mean, the differences are, it's just truly unbelievable that there's that much difference. But you're right, Bruce, huge.
It is. Lynn?
Yeah. I was just going to say, I've got four quick things to mention. One, my week has been a tough one because I've been trying to get somebody into the hospital. And after a severe accident, it took 10 days to get her hospitalized and 3 ER visits. So our healthcare system is just kind of a mess. And so that's been the hard part, but we've made progress. I do want to mention 3 quick things. One, that the Medical Reserve Corps and the CERT team that's been so heroic in offering the vaccination sites is now changing their model. Because most people are vaccinated, the vaccinations are now moving into the pharmacy. And Tyler Young, the wonderful pharmacy owner and manager, thinks they can handle the current volume inside the pharmacy, those who are not going to CMARC. And I just think that's so great. Truman.
Yeah, Lynn, I'm sorry, but I think you're rattling your mic somehow, and it's making a heck of a racket. Could you be careful of where your hands are? I don't know what you're doing.
I
think it's you that's doing that. Sorry.
It might be. Yes, this cord seems to pick up everything,
yeah.
So I'll sit perfectly still.
Sit still. Don't move, whatever you do.
The All right, other sorry, two sorry. Things I want to mention real quickly is that the exhibit at the Vashon History Museum, the current In and Out exhibit about the LGBTQ populations on Vashon, has just won its 3rd award. I helped curator Stephen Silla by writing a critical review for this application to the Association of, I think it was State and Local Museums, a long time ago, somewhere back in January, February, or March, somewhere. And he was notified yesterday that they are one of the winners of this award and invited him to Little Rock, Arkansas for the presentation and the annual meeting down there. So I'm hoping he'll let me go along as a road trip. But this exhibit is going to now stay open through September, I think, which is at the end when the awards are going to be presented in Arkansas on September 24th. So that's pretty exciting. And I want to
Very
thank Bruce
exciting.
And Ellen. What's her name? I'm sorry, Bruce. I can't remember Ellen's last name.
Ellen Kritzman.
Yes, thank you. And all the people from the museum who are part of that. It's a great exhibit. And since it's going to remain open, please go see it. It's moving. And lastly, I just want to say I ran into our pal, Susan McCabe, on the streets, who is handing out flyers for the new season in July and August of the Vashon Repertory Theater. So that's opening now for some theater in the park, in Open Park, and some at Open Space, and one at Snapdragon, and one at Vashon Center for the Arts. So it's little, it's 2 weekends with several plays that are kind of rotating, so hopefully everybody can get in and see it. So the first weekend is July 21st through 25th, and the second is July 29th and August 1st. It's the Vashon Repertory Theater Festival. So I'm planning to be there. I'm thrilled that theater, especially outside, is coming back to us. So that's my news for the week.
Great. And that's a good segue into if we can sort of move this script a bit. About June 30th is the proposed date that the state of Washington will end all restrictions, all COVID restrictions. And I just was wondering what the Briefleys thought about that. You know, is that a wise move? Is it too quick? Is it appropriate? What's your read on June 30th as removing all restrictions?
Well, you know, I'm still sort of in mask mode. I recall the thought process when I adopted mask wearing for the first time, and recognition that it's I'm protecting the others around me and so on, and it's not a selfish thing. And now it just seems weird to be in company without masks on. But I think the only thing that I trust the system that we have in Washington State of keeping an eye on the variants. What is the risk? And of course, nobody's risk is zero. right? Your risk is much lower if you've been vaccinated, particularly if it's 2 weeks after the last round of vaccination. So it's important not to just stop at one if you're in the Pfizer or Moderna. If you have underlying health conditions, I would say that keeping a mask on is probably prudent for a while until the variants sort themselves out.
I agree fully with that. And I think that one of the dilemmas this restriction poses for us all is that while it will make it easier for all businesses to open again and try to appease some of the people who have been kind of anti-mask, the dilemma it puts up for me is you don't know when you're walking around then who's been vaccinated and who is not. It's sort of been kind of code that if you're wearing a mask, you're really trying to do your part to prevent injury to yourself and others. And for me, I know I want to continue wearing masks in indoor crowded gatherings because I don't want, Kevin, you mentioned that kind of we still have a slight risk, both from the vaccine and even though it will, prevent a severe illness, I don't want to get it at all. And I just think that we'll see how it works out, whether it will raise the number of cases or not, which have been, going downhill because of all the people wearing masks.
Two things. I think I read that we're at 88. That's pretty darn good, I think, considering that they're looking at 70% for their quote-unquote herd immunity. So, I'm feeling pretty comfortable here on the island anyway.
Yeah, I think so too. And they've got vaccination programs going on for the 12-plus-year-olds now,
right. Yeah.
That Pfizer's been approved for. So the school district is working with the Medical Reserve Corps and Vashon Be Prepared to get that cohort, that 12 to 15-year-old cohort, vaccinated. And then we just need to wait until there's approval for the under 12-year-olds. Right. But Vashon's done very well. And I just wanted to ask them briefly, what do you think it is that made Vashon so successful? I mean, we've got a population of close to 12,000 people. We've had 121 cases, 3 deaths, all of whom had other conditions. So why has Vashon been so successful? Yeah, Truman.
I think one of the things is that you mentioned, Lynn, is that Tyler at the pharmacy, first of all, and then the Medical Reserve Corps and the CERT folks, putting that whole program together made it so darn easy to do. I mean, all you had to do is schedule it, drive through, and bang, you're done. I think that went a long, long ways toward getting folks to do it. I just want to point out one other quick thing. We do a number of PSAs here on KVSH, and one of the latest ones, we have a group of COVID-19 PSAs that talk about procedures and things that you should do. And I'm sorry, I don't know who does it, but somebody does a song about wearing your mask. It is absolutely brilliant, funny, and really appropriate. If we have time, I'd be willing to play it. It's wonderful. So anyway,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, find that. Cue it up. I've been thinking about your question, and I think it's a really good one, since the model for Vashon's Medical Reserve Corps that they put up has now been going around the world, if not, and certainly around the nation, as kind of a way for rural communities to put together a program without them having to be mass huge sites, taken care of by somebody big. For me, what I think contributed was that we are, one, an island of a lot of retired people with some time to volunteer. Number two, this is a regional medical center. So around Seattle, so that there are a lot of people who are retired doctors and nurses and social workers on the island who are capable of managing the vaccinations and the tests. And number three, I think that the Medical Reserve Corps got revitalized actually in January 2020, just ahead of this tsunami of COVID cases that set up. And I think that was thanks to the great vision of Ina Oplinger and John Osborne, both the doctors who originally sort of set up the medical part. And now I will add Jim Bristow kind of coordinated a lot of funding to come into the Medical Reserve Corps to be able to fund the tents and the vaccines and all of that as it started. So it was an amazing storm of kind of perfect conditions for us to be able to do it.
Yeah, and I think if I can add one more thing to that, that the fact that Vashon Be Prepared at the Emergency Operations Center had been in place and had done the Cascade Rising exercise. I mean, what we had was we had an emergency response organization in place to deal with the big one, the big earthquake that was going to come, devastate the island. And they were able to pivot that whole organization very, very quickly. Link up with the MRC and Medical Reserve Corps in new ways. And so what we had was, like you said, almost a perfect storm. We had everything in place that we needed. And then we had the volunteers to step forward. And so I think back, you know, a year ago into the summer and early fall, when COVID was just sort of gradually gaining steam, that allowed the organizations on the island to get organized and get things in place. And when November hit, and if you remember in November, I mean, infection rates on Vashon were doubling every week. Now, it's not big numbers, you know, it was doubling from 4 to 8 and 8 to 16 and 16 to 32. But within a month, you know, we almost quadrupled the number of cases on Vashon. And the organization was there to respond. So,
yeah, I agree. Awesome. And thank you for especially mentioning Vashon Be Prepared and the Emergency Operations Center, because the Vashon Be Prepared kind of group is that huge coalition of island healthcare providers, which includes not only the MRC and the Emergency sort of Directive Center out of the EOC, but the participation of CERT. The community emergency response teams were able to provide a lot of person power to be available to help direct traffic and publicize these kinds of things. It was an amazing coming together. Maybe we should find a better word than a perfect storm when it's a perfect constellation of wonderful things coming together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kevin.
I also wonder if there's some, maybe you'd call them intangibles that contributed. You know, we have a very high propensity of progressive voters on Vashon. Right. And that party was very serious about the pandemic. They didn't deny it. They were saying, we need to take action. We need to protect ourselves. You know, the conservative political party was, it's just going to go away. Don't worry about it. The other thing is that, you know, the sense of community on Vashon, since, you know, I've been here for 25, 26 years now, but, you know, having a seashore that defines your community is pretty impactful, I think, in a lot of ways. So, you know, we know who we are. We know that we are older than a lot of other demographics. We know there's vulnerabilities, and we are in community. So I think there might be other also an intangible of really respecting the health and safety of others that may have contributed. And the third maybe intangible is, you know, to be on Vashon, you got to be able to be pretty adroit, agile, and deal with adversity, right? We have a ferry system, which isn't always working. We have an internet system that isn't always up and running. We have a power system that can go down for a week. So, you know, to survive, you got to be kind of able to handle the lumps and bumps in the road. And I wonder if that just gives Vashonites in general a little more flexibility about around work options and flexibility, and do I have to go into the office, or, you know, is my boss accommodating because he knows that I live in this situation? So people maybe could take a little time to isolate and still be able to, you know, engage in whatever employment they had. So there's a lot of other factors that come to mind for me, but it's hard to put a pin in those.
Great point.
Well, it's very interesting, Kevin, you mentioned the fact that Vashon's a very discreet identified community because of being an island, because you're either on the island or not on the island. There's no ambiguity, you know, when you drive between Kent and Auburn, when are you in Auburn and when are you in Kent? Except for a sign on the road, you know, it's hard to tell. But Vashon, you know, you're either on the water or you're on the island, you know, or the mainland. Yeah. The other thing that I find fascinating about that, been doing a lot of work with census data, Vashon is one of the only census tracts in the United States that has not changed. We have two census districts on Vashon, or census tracts on Vashon, the north end and the south end, basically about Cemetery Road is the dividing line. And those have not changed since the late 1900s. I mean, the late 1800s. So what you get is consistent data representing how Vashon has changed, how populations have changed. But also, I mean, virtually every other census district in the United States has changed, you know, as populations grow and things change and city boundaries change, all that kind of thing, counties, you know, state borders change. Vashon hasn't changed in 150 years. It's very interesting.
Bruce, is that true in terms of the Hispanic population, the Latinx population? Because I think one of the things I noticed during the COVID response in the Medical Reserve Corps and the CERT people was that we had some leaders from the Latinx community step up to work with us, which is the first time I remember that. Lydia Aguilar, who's been representing the Latinx community and translating and doing outreach, did a phenomenal job. And so, you know, what do you know about that? It seems like we have a bigger Latinx population than we used to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very. And by this fall, we'll see the data for Vashon Island. And so the Latinx population on Vashon has been growing consistently since the 1980s. But in the 2010s, and all we have now is 2010 census data. By September or October, we'll have the local data for Vashon. And it's, you know, 2020 census is problematic, but it does at least have age and gender and racial identities. And so the major categories. So we'll have a much better picture in by the end of this year of how Vashon has changed in the past decade.
I think, though, Lynn, one of the things that what Bruce was talking about was the boundaries, not necessarily the population, but the boundary lines of where what we look at. And
what,
who,
you mean we don't gerrymander?
Well, yeah, but how those populations change within those boundaries. I think that's really what he was talking about.
So. Right, yeah. But also, Lynn, and then Kevin, but Lynn, I think it was, again, sort of that perfect constellation. Vashon Be Prepared, the Emergency Operations Center, MRC, all reached out to the Latinx community at the same time the Latinx community reached out to them. And so it was that sort of common interest that really transformed what could have been a very sort of dominant population sort of effort. And it became much more diverse. And I think intentionally so by all sides. And so that's something also to be very proud of.
Kevin. Yeah, and I would just mention the name of Maricel Franco, I believe it's her name, who also stepped up to do piles of translations of documents and interactions regarding this. So not only Lydia, but Maricel are the two names of people that I've met that I know are highly involved, and we just can't thank them enough.
Mm-hmm. And I think Marielle might be her first name.
Marielle, thank you.
Yes. I was thinking that, you know, last week we talked about the issue that Susan McCabe wrote about in The Beachcomber about the percentage of people of color in the high school and the contrast with the, the staff there at the high school and how different they are. And so I'll be curious, Bruce, if the data that you mentioned that's going to come out this fall, will also give us an update on the racial diversity of Vashon.
Yeah, it will. Racial diversity on Vashon, and we only have up to the 2010 census to really get a read on that. And census data is again problematic. Not everybody responds, and and traditionally underrepresented populations are underrepresented in the census. But my sense is basically the major minority groups on Vashon have always been relatively small, 2 to 6%. For Native Americans, African Americans, Latinx community is growing, but I think in 2010 census it was around 6 or 7%. And so as you look through all those sort of identifiable census racial categories, I think we'll see some significant changes. The other part of the census that's difficult is it doesn't enumerate LGBTQ plus people. And right. So that's a whole demographic that's sort of missing from census data.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to see if that 25% in data point from the high school is representative of the island. There's, of course, a lot of students who come to Vashon from the mainland. Although I've been on those ferry boats when they're full of the students going, either coming or going. And, I wouldn't say that there's 25% people of color there. So it'd be quite interesting to see, what trending we see in Vashon racial diversity data. I'm real curious to see when it comes out.
And my hand went up because I wanted to I was kind of laughing a little bit as you were speaking. Much of what you said, I really agree with, but I laughed to hear the word always been, our population has kind of always been similar in terms of a low percentage of people of color. I just sort of want to laughingly put back, that may be true from the time the whites started it, taking over the island, but certainly wasn't true when the Squababs and other, native tribes, the Duwamish perhaps, were here in their days of glory, before they were kind of taken away. And I know you know all about that, and I don't know when that happened.
Well, I mean, be clear about it. I mean, when the Squabop people were here, and they were the only residents, full-time residents of Vashon Island, and they were what anthropologists call proto-Puyallup. Right. They were absorbed within the Puyallup tribe when the treaties were negotiated and the reservations were created in the 1850s. But that population was very homogeneous, and it was replaced by another very homogeneous population. That sense of, there was diversity at one point and there wasn't diversity and now we're getting more diversity, that's a little misreading of what was going on. Mm-hmm.
Good point.
So asking Kevin about Joe Manchin and his announced vote against the For the People Act, what's going on with that?
Can you see how much hair I've pulled out in the last 24 hours? it's quite interesting. There's a few interpretations that I've heard, but Manchin is very consistent, certainly. So I guess we can give him credit for that. The Indivisible Leadership sent an email out, what the blank do we do now? Their theory is that we're heading for a showdown on this issue. And I see a lot of evidence for that. I see a lot of progressive groups gearing up for that showdown. And the theory is that Manchin's putting a stake in the ground to try to deflate that that move to the showdown. Like, let's not have the showdown because I'm not going to vote for it. And so you're just wasting your time. Let's just go off and talk about, as they said, roads and bridges. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Schumer and Pelosi and Biden are going to let this blow over and not challenge essentially Manchin. I think they're going to force the vote. And that's apparently the plan, is the Paycheck Fairness Act. Schumer is going to bring that bill forward, we hear, in the next couple of weeks. And then the For the People Act, which is the really critical legislation for voting rights and voting freedom, is apparently going to be called to a vote the week of the 21st of June and probably the 24th. So people need to contact our senators and let them know that, you know what, we need to proceed. We need to call out the conservative opposition to this legislation that we care about, that West Virginians frankly care about. A new poll says that independents, Republicans, and progressives all favor voting freedom. And I'm not, you know, we're a democracy, no surprise. So our listeners should get out their pencils, because the number to call for Murray and Cantwell, I'll mention those after others have a chance to come.
You know, for me, I've just been kind of reading about some of the commentary, and I watched Rachel Maddow last night kind of about this, and it's such an interesting thing. Some of the commentators have said that, you know, Joe Manchin, who's the Democratic senator from West Virginia, is really highly influenced by Mitch McConnell and is trying to also follow the steps of one of his predecessors, Robert Byrd, who saw himself as a centrist, and that Joe Manchin tries to kind of always go toward the center, no matter kind of what is happening, and that he sees himself as sort of a champion of centrism, whereas what he's doing is really kind of complicating the ability to really identify what is problematic about some of the issues around what a filibuster does. And James Downey wrote a pretty interesting column about this in today's Seattle Times on the opinion page, A14, just basically saying he thinks Manchin is kind of delusional in thinking he can really prevent this filibuster by kind of always going to the center and trying to step in between the legislature and kind of the Biden administration, you know, who's trying to really make some big changes. And so it's an interesting and very abstract, complex kind of policy situation that is happening that I think is kind of hard to understand and communicate about. So I hope when you give these numbers of people to contact on, you know, on behalf of our senators and, you know, the people that we want to give our information to, would you give kind of a sentence or two, Kevin, about, you know, what a simple term or simple statement, you know, could be about what we want them to do and kind of how to, you know, reduce this complex thing to an easy to communicate sense.
Sure. Maybe I'll jump in and do that now. That's a really good point, Lynn. First of all, these phone numbers are for our senators.
Yes.
So 202-224-2621 for Senator Murray and 202-224-3441 for Senator Cantwell. And those can be found pretty easily or at the end of any edition of For Your Consideration. The basic request is that we proceed calling votes to the floor in the Senate to try to make progress and to illustrate that the Senate is not functioning. The Senate is not allowing for legislation that we care about and most people in the country care about. The Senate is not functioning in a way to allow those items to be voted upon. And we need to show that the system needs to change so that we can make progress. And removal of the filibuster is what we are asking for. revision of the filibuster to allow critical legislation to be voted upon so that a majority rule system can resume its place in the Senate is essentially what we're asking for.
Thank you so much.
So Truman, what are you hearing from your Army buddies who mostly live in red states? Are you hearing much about this kind of thing, or are they just...
No, you know, in fact, it's very surprising to me. The only thing I see is a hint every once in a while of the demented Joe Biden and the return of Donald Trump. That's it. Boy, that's just about it. Some of my other conservative friends are not getting vaccinated. I don't understand why, but I think it's, politically motivated, which makes zero sense to me. And I've made that very clear in what I've said back to them. They're being very quiet. I think they're, I don't know if they've reading the tea leaves or what, but, they have not been speaking loudly about any of this. Surprising.
Interesting. So Kevin, Joe Manchin's up for re-election in 2022, correct? And his editorial about opposing the For the People Act was in the local Charleston, West Virginia newspaper. Do you think this is him positioning himself for his re-election run within a state, and it's really just more of an illusion than a reality?
That's an interesting question. He certainly has to protect his job. He'll be very motivated to do that. In the state, which, if I remember the numbers right, Trump won by 40%. So he's clearly got a lot of conservative voters to interact with. And so he's certainly, I think, always conscious of that, right? About how his words play in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. Intriguingly, very heavily Democratic state up until decades ago. So it's sort of an interesting to think about what are the motivations for West Virginians, given the fact that their recent past was as Democrat voters. It does kind of make another point that I wanted to mention. Eventually, regardless of what happens with the filibuster and so on, we got to win some elections here. Our margin in the House is pretty slim. I think it's 5, and our margin in the Senate is 0. We got a tiebreaker. But we are now rolling out an updated get-out-the-vote information on the indivisiblevashon.org webpage. So go to indivisiblevashon.org. Right at the top, the third item from the top is the Get Out the Vote page, the GOTV page. You'll see opportunities in a number of different states that are going to make a big difference in 2022. So if you want to make some phone calls, write some postcards, the data's there. So no matter what happens in the short term, we got to get the voters out, and we got to make sure to elect the kind of folks who are going to lead the country in the way that we want.
Lynn.
What I'm so curious about is some of the kind of underlying questions to the way we do politics. I keep noticing how many people hesitate to do the right thing, in my opinion, the right thing, because it seems like one of the highest priorities is to get reelected. So as opposed to kind of taking any risk of doing something innovative or necessary, even if people don't all like it, it seems like one of the driving factors is just to stay elected. And I don't know, I was trained to always go to work every day with the expectation that I could be fired at any moment for trying to stand up for my ethics and my principles, but that my ethics and principles and the standards and protocols in my job were the most important things, and that I had to be prepared to risk being ousted if I thought I was right. So it's a puzzling thing for me that I just keep hearing we have to, get reelected, and so I'm not doing this or that. It just seems like a flaw in the system.
Well, you know, I mean, one of the things that surprised me was that they were talking to some of the freshmen congressional folks, and they were saying that they were kind of amazed at the fact that a very large portion of their day is devoted to fundraising. Yes. In order to get reelected, and that much of the work that they do is strictly fundraising for their own campaigns. I mean, I find that, you know, absolutely appalling, if you want to know the truth.
I agree.
And I'm wondering if, you know, is term limits an answer to that? I mean, I don't know.
I thought the same thing, Truman, but I don't know. Maybe we should take term limits out and make sure that not out, but what about a one-term, you know, Senate? You don't have the consistency and long-term authority, you know, that you'd get if you were there doing good for a long time. But on the other hand, it prevents people from being bold.
And one of the things that that I hearken back to, you know, I was a park commissioner for 8 years. I served 2 terms as a park commissioner. And I was astounded that it took me 2 years to learn the job. Yeah. I mean, it's a 4-year term. But really, I had to be there 2 years before I really learned everything that the park district did and how I could affect it.
I think that's true.
It's going to be a lot longer than that for congressional folks because it's so much more complicated. So, you know, you have to look at that aspect too. If you look at the idiotic stuff that Trump did, you know, a lot of simply because he just did not know. He didn't understand, you know. And not only did he not know, he wouldn't listen to anybody when somebody tried to tell him, you know, that, hey, you can't do that. That's not the way it's done, you know.
Right.
So.
Yeah. What's interesting to me, and when you look at Australia and New Zealand, which I have spent time with, and look at their political system, what they do is they limit the amount of campaigning that goes on. You can't campaign until about 6 weeks before an election. They cut it off about 2 weeks before an election, or at least 1 week before an election. And then they also limit the amount of money that can be spent in election campaigns. And so what it does is it sort of changes the dynamic there.
I like that.
Yes, as Truman pointed out, we're getting to the end here. So I'd like to just touch one thing briefly with the Briefly's in terms of COVID and summer plans. Anybody making any changes in summer plans? Are you going to have a summer very much like last summer? How is COVID going to affect what you do in the next 2-3 months? Truman?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, I generally don't plan past tomorrow, but because that's just kind of the way I am. But you know, we recently had a little vacation. We were gone for 5 days, and we had our little COVID pod, you know, a group that had spent some time together. We were all vaccinated, and we went and spent 5 days together out in Idaho and Wyoming. And it was wonderful, wonderful to get away and spend that time. So I can see us doing something like that again.
Yeah, and I've been looking at some outdoor opportunities. There's a old-time music camp out I've been going to for years in Centralia that's a jam for people who like old-time and related roots-oriented music. That was closed, you know, this last summer, and it's reopening this year, and that's sometime mid-August. So I'm headed to that. I have really missed my music. And the second thing I'm looking at is a retreat up at Holden Village, which is a spiritual retreat center from the Lutherans and the Episcopalians and I think some other affiliated groups up in the mountains above Lake Chelan sometime mid-July. You know, that's like a week usually. So I always try to fit my away time so that I can do the Briefly no matter where I am, but we'll see how that goes. And I'm just so thrilled to be getting outside with other people and having some fun.
Kevin? And normally, Bruce, for me, we'd be thinking about where to take the boat and all, but since all the Americans can't get out to Canada and they're all crowded into the San Juans and Puget Sound, I'm enjoying working on the house and doing some work in the shop. I got a deck that needs to be replaced. And after 4 years of advocacy to hire a new president, there's been a little deferred maintenance. So that's probably where I'm going to focus a lot of my time this summer.
How about you, Bruce?
Well, same thing with Canada's closed to those of us with boats that usually head up north. So we'll probably just do a mid-sound, south sound kind of cruise around the area here, and, but still get out on the boat some. So looking for a summer that's not too different from usual summers. Lots of grandkids, beach time, that kind of stuff.
There you go. All right, so speaking of the water, there.